tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 7th of May, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means it's time for our very special guest, geopolitical analyst, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, just as fair warning, I have a co-host here from Turkey. Her name is Chubba Purdy, purebred Turkish Angora. She's deaf, so she doesn't know how loud her meow is. So, you know, she may or may not interfere. Right now she's sleeping, but you never know with her. So, but I'm feeling decent. Before the show, you know, two drummers. I haven't played in many years, but two drummers talking shop is always fun. Something we have in common. And we could talk about that all day, I'm sure.
We could talk about drumming all the time. I do enjoy talking about drumming, but I think the listeners are tuning in to hear what you have to say in particular today, Matt. And in particular today, we are going to be talking about the racial replacement agenda in Ukraine, where they are not just talking about, but saying they're going to actually do import migrants from countries which are even poorer than Ukraine. And we're using a site which we haven't used before. They're actually called Remix. And our notes start off with a quote from your book, Matt. And it says, "The Washington Post, reporting on a video from a cemetery in Kharkov, quoted a Polish journalist. It seems that there are twice as many graves of killed soldiers as there were exactly a year ago. The best of Ukraine is being deliberately exterminated, no doubt to be replaced by third world migrants brought into the country by corporate NGOs." From Dr. Johnson's Borhi Splashini Krovye, "The Foundations and Causes of the Russo-Ukrainian War of 2022 to 2025, page 195. And here we are today, and your prediction is has come true, Matt. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I have about 10 million predictions that came true. It doesn't take a genius to see that this is going to be a great excuse to destroy a country that's pretty much already destroyed. It's going to be unrecognizable racially. If you just put into Google the Ukrainian Association of Foreign Employment Agencies, you'll get a ridiculously long list of NGOs and sometimes government agencies, but mostly NGOs dedicated entirely to bringing the third world into Ukraine. And remember, some of these predate the war. Keep in mind that the so-called recovery, whenever this war is over, and it's, you know, to a great extent, it is winding down. The Ukrainian government just uses terrorism at this point against Crimea or wherever they can, killing civilians. But, it doesn't take a genius to realize that they were going to use this to remake the country entirely. It's incredibly unpopular. It wasn't something they talked about, but all of a sudden, they're talking about it openly. And I knew that there were, you know, there were companies in Ukraine, all financed by the West. And keep in mind, the recovery is going to be run by BlackRock. That's a matter of policy. That's not a secret. And so they're behind quite a bit of this. And the propaganda has already begun in the country that you're going to accept these Africans. And when men come home, whether, you know, in with PTSD and all kinds of medical problems. Well, I guess you're going to have to accept that you've been replaced with people who are willing to work for far less money. You know, when the war began, the Ukrainian government, remember, Ukraine is largely a colony of the U.S. anyway, but they use this as an excuse to completely eliminate all of their protections for labor. Everything. Employers can do whatever they want. Wages are at an absolute minimum, even for, you know, high quality jobs. Now, you know, it's the daily average wage is like a dollar an hour. But the situation is, you know, there's a normal cost of living in Ukraine. So the only way that anyone could exist there is through the black market and black and gray markets. That's the only way anything functions, because there is no economy in Ukraine. So the whole theory is that the population loss has been so severe, they're finally admitting that millions have been killed at the front. Well, the only thing we can do is bring in Africans in particular. And you're going to accept it whether you like it or not. And there's agency after agency after agency funded by the West, designed to make this as easy as possible. There really is no labor legislation anymore. So bringing them over is, you know, they could do it en masse. And this wasn't depressing enough. This is what is, you know, so all the so-called nationalists who supported this war from the Ukrainian side, this is what you get. Don't say I didn't tell you so.
Well, I feel very sorry for the soldiers returning, and this is what they're going to come back to. Similar happened at the end of World War One, when the British soldiers returned to the country of Wales. There, black people had suddenly appeared there, and they were doing the jobs that the white people were doing before that. And there was race riots and all sorts of problems. So it's not like this hasn't happened before, that there's a war. And the result is there isn't enough manpower, so the country then starts importing manpower from elsewhere. And you were saying there about these NGOs that are funded by the West. I imagine there are a lot of them, because there are a lot of black Africans in Africa. And a businessman or a capitalist is going to be looking at that, and they're going to say, we've got all this human resources there which aren't being used. We need to set up a facility that can hunt around the world for countries that need human labour, and then we need to facilitate it to get them over there. And they think they're doing a good thing. So I wouldn't necessarily say that the people that are involved in this are doing it because they're evil and they want to wipe out white people. I think a lot of the motive for this is just helping Africans out. But of course, as we know, they genetically, they're Africans. They're different to Europeans. It's not going to work out well. Starting off with these quotes here. Zelensky's head of his presidential office in Ukraine, Kirilo Budanov, has announced plans to import migrant labourers from Africa. Essentially, this entails Ukraine establishing new laws for the legal entry and residence of foreign workers. The government will introduce a new list of migration risk countries to facilitate this plan. According to remarks Budanov made at the CEO Club Ukraine, they enter, obtain documents, and then move on. This is a problem that creates barriers for business, Budanov reportedly said, emphasising that Ukraine will now move to make it easier for migrants to stay and work in Ukraine. It has long been known that Ukraine faces a serious demographic crisis, now exacerbated by men who have died in the war or fled to other countries. Already there have been voices pushing for mass immigration in Ukraine since the war began. Last year, Remix News reported that Vasil Voskobojnik, president of the Ukrainian Association of Foreign Employment Agencies, said the population decline can no longer be offset by simply increasing the birth rate. Instead, immigration from third world countries is the only solution. Voskobojnik said that Ukrainian government must develop a migration policy for 2026 that focuses on reducing this shortage. However, importing foreign workers and foreign warriors will only add to concerns that Ukraine will never be a desired member of the European Union, as the EU faces its own crises brought on by mass immigration. Last autumn, Ukraine's former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dmytro Kuleba, flatly stated that Ukraine may have to open its borders to third world migrants because of its demographic crisis, with Ukraine already having the worst population growth in Europe even before the war. So it seems like this is a done deed. This is what the government are going to do there. They're going to open up the borders. And they need to get in people that are worse off than the people in Ukraine are already, which means that they're going to be going to the very, very worst countries in the world in order to find their labour for this. What do you make of it, Matt?
Well, that's a very short list of countries that are worse off than Ukrainians economically. I mean, you're talking about Ghana and Mali, and very few others. Ukraine is an absolute basket case. The demographic problem that started in the 90s, the brain drain started there. And unlike in Belarus and Russia, there was no government that was going to clamp down on it and stop the privatization and rebuild the population. You know, Belarus doesn't have this problem anymore. But my question is, what economy are they talking about? The industrialized parts of the country are already part of Russia. There's no, you know, they're not, you know, breakaway republics. They're a part of Russia now. So they're never, that's never going to change. So whatever rump Ukraine is going to remain is going to have, you know, minor industry, but it's mostly going to be set for raw materials exports, which doesn't mean very much because the EU has their own. There is nothing Ukraine has that the West wants or needs or can't make themselves. And so it wouldn't take very much. It's not going to be a substantial economy that has to be staffed by all of these third worlders. And this has been in mind for a very long time. They're using a problem that they created, this war, which they started, not the Russians, and the mass population decline that came into existence because of the oligarchic takeover. And, of course, one of the first things that oligarchy does is destroy all labor laws, which they've done. This is their creation. So, you know, this has been on the agenda since the 90s. And since that, you know, the oligarchy is almost exclusively Jewish in Ukraine, the government that runs the country is a small group, mostly Jewish people, who are ready to run at a moment's notice. You know, they may not be, you know, direct evil. Maybe they are, but they certainly don't care one way or the other. They certainly despise Ukraine. Ukraine is associated with the Khmelnytsky and the Cossack uprisings. This has been in the Jewish mind for a very long time. This is an agenda, whether they had a population crisis or not, they'd find some reason. And the tragedy is that Ukraine in the early 90s was the most educated country on the planet. You had a percentage of people with advanced degrees with the highest of any other country in the world. The potential there, especially looking east, not west, was extraordinary. If they had stayed with Russia and Belarus and traded heavily with them in China, they'd be by far a wealthy country today. But because of the violence, the takeover, and oligarchy, looking to the West, which was itself on its last legs, they have hollowed everything out. They've destroyed what's left. So what economy that needs to be staffed by these immigrants, they're not saying. Any industry that's going to be, you know, I guess you could transfer industry there and then bring in third worlders. But for the most part, the western part of Ukraine is not industrialized. That's in the east. That's part of why they broke away. And being part of Russia, they now are a prosperous area. They weren't under the third world Ukraine. They're now advanced second world, as you know, the Russians always have been. So they had no problem with the population falling, and then with 2 million dead, and God knows the injuries, and the entire country has PTSD, as far as I'm concerned. There's going to be a takeover going on here, And it's very typical. And you know, they use the army is mostly mercenaries from God knows where. So why not have them run what's left of the economy? And they're going to have to say, like you say, the soldiers that are able to return home are going to be a mess mentally. The best of the best case scenario is they're going to have PTSD. Worst case is they're going to, you know, be mutilated. Fighting for these guys, they're going to find everything, you know, I'm sure, including their wives, with others. And if they say a word about it, they're going to prison. Now, the legal aspect of it is in process about sending people to jail for criticizing this. It is a lawless country because it's an oligarchy, so it really doesn't matter. And the same thing goes for the labor legislation. So I have the feeling that if you come out against this, so-called nationalists who love this war, they're going to end up going to the front lines, getting drafted if they criticize this. You know, the Ukrainian government does what it pleases. There is no real law. There is no real constitution. It just doesn't matter. And they're governed mostly by the U.S. embassy, and they have been since at least 2014, if not earlier.
Well, they also recently announced that they were strengthening up laws surrounding anti-Semitism and making that an imprisonable offence. I forget how many years you could get for that. It's only a short step from that to include all discrimination. And a lot of the time you end up with these front companies, these refugee NGOs, a lot of them are managed by Jews. And a lot of the spokesmen for allowing refugees in and allowing multiculturalism, they very, very often happen to be Jewish. And then those anti-Semitism laws will come into play. And that's what will prevent people from being able to criticize this. They'll say, well, you're criticizing Jews, you're being anti-Semitic, or you're being racist. And they'll end up locking them away for complaining about it. Now, Kuleba said Ukraine has to focus on people who need this country and are ready to rebuild it. Well, I would say, well, that's only going to be the Ukrainians, isn't it, really? These people exist, he said, although they are in the minority, then indicating that the only solution is to bring in migrants. These migrant newcomers will also need adequate housing, wages, and a working environment to make them choose Ukraine. However, it is questionable how a country whose economy and state administration are in ruins as a result of war could handle mass immigration from the Third World. Unlike how migration was marketed, many of the migrants who came to Western Europe have ended up draining state coffers through social welfare, education, housing, and integration. In Germany, for instance, foreigners cost the government nearly 50 billion euros in 2023 alone. Ukraine also does not have as many resources for integrating migrants as Western states, and as already noted, integration has been far from a success story there. Even groups that have lived there for centuries, such as the Hungarians, are actively discriminated against, even at the government level. Since Ukraine will mostly be rebuilt using Western funds, it is likely that Americans, Germans, and French, already hit hard by the costs of mass immigration, will be the ones paying for social welfare and integration for Ukraine's newly arrived welfare recipients. As the Russo-Ukrainian war drags on, the chances that Ukrainian refugees and their children, who have been living and working abroad for 3 years, will not return to economically devastated Ukraine are increasing. 2 points there that I find interesting. They mentioned there that the newly arrived immigrants will turn into welfare recipients. Well, exactly the same thing has just happened in Spain. The Prime Minister there just legalized all the illegal immigrants, and they're besieging the social welfare offices, basically. As soon as they get citizenship, they're then claiming that they are vulnerable. And if they're vulnerable, then they need housing, they need social welfare, and all the rest of it. So that's 1 point to point out. And the second bit is where it talks about the Hungarians still being discriminated against. And I think that the website that we're using here, Remix, I had a look at it, and it seems to be based around sort of Hungary, Poland, Eastern Europe. So it may be that it's Hungarians that are actually writing this. So they may have a dog in the fight, so to say. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, the way that this is written, it sounds like, you know, they're saying matter-of-factly what our people say all the time. In other words, it's totally obvious over there, you know, what migration has done and how corruption has brought it about. But the economy and state administration are in ruins. They were in ruins long before the war. And the war really started in 2014, not 2022. I discussed that at great length in my book. You know, oligarchies don't produce much. They strip what already exists. As you mentioned, laws against anti-Semitism, they were decreed when this government took over in early 2014. And that's just going to get, as you said, expanded. And any criticism of the government would essentially be anti-Semitism. That's what Lenin said, you know, to be anti-Soviet is to be anti-Semitic. And vice versa. I talked to about this a lot about Pete Kihonish's show on Solzhenitsyn's book. He brings that up quite a bit. And again, you know, the law is secondary here. And wages are extremely low, and they're going to go even farther down. Which means that even those who want to rebuild, Ukrainians who want to rebuild, are not going to stay. They can't stay. These third worlders are going to be totally dependent on welfare. And this is all being, you know, organized by BlackRock and the U.S. government. They're going to be totally dependent, and they could be used against any real nationalist movement. And I keep saying, if the military doesn't take over the government and run it as a military dictatorship for a while and kicks the U.S. out, if they don't do this very soon, Ukraine is simply not going to exist anymore. It's going to be a diaspora. They're going to be like the Kurds. But these plans, these organizations have been around for a very long time. But the phrase, the only solution, is used over and over and over again. And that's quite deliberate, making people think that, yeah, I guess we have no other choice. But they never say what the nature of this economy is going to be, where they're going to need all of these people. So, you know, Ukraine, of course, is in no position to bring these people in. The entire thing is going to be financed by BlackRock and Western taxpayers. Ukraine never had much sovereignty to begin with, and now it's just essentially going to be a social experiment, and it's going to end up being far worse than what's going on in Germany or Britain or Italy or any of these other places. And yeah, the laws already essentially don't matter, but these organizations are making it very easy to bring these people in, get citizenship almost immediately over nothing, and start working for pennies. So it's, you know, to choose Ukraine, well, they're going to make sure that they choose Ukraine. But, you know, and whatever wages that they're paid, I guess, would be better than in Ghana. Or in Congo, you know, there's not many countries that would matter, but I guess for higher level jobs it would be. Even higher level jobs, the pay is extremely low. You know, generals in Ukraine are paid a few bucks a month. I don't know how they're haven't taken over here, unless you're just totally brainwashed. I don't know, but I keep saying it: the military has to take over this government. Create a military organization that runs it and rebuild some semblance of sovereignty with the help of Russia and Belarus, or there simply isn't going to be a Ukraine. And them saying the only solution, the only solution, the only solution over and over and over again, it's almost like a mantra with these people. That's far from the case. And of course, they know it.
I think the only economy there will be will be rebuilding the country. That's what will need to be done. And the way that they'll do that is by getting out loans from the World Bank. And Ukraine will turn out like another tin pot country in Africa, just owing everything to the bank. And there'll just be more and more corruption. That's what I can see happening. And on top of that, you'll have a third world population imported from Africa and India and Bangladesh, Afghanistan, places like that, where they're not really known for their high IQ either, unlike these Ukrainians originally were, as you were saying earlier, Matt, that they did very well academically, which shows they had a high IQ. They're swapping the high IQ population for a low IQ one. Millions of Ukrainians have left their country and hundreds of thousands of men are dead and wounded at the front. Now, employers and big capital are already suggesting that the only solution is for mass immigration of third world migrants. This means that after the war is over, many of the soldiers will come home to a Ukraine that will be rapidly transformed under their feet. Currently, every 10 Ukrainian women give birth to only 7 children on average, while to maintain the population, this number should be at least 22. Without this, Ukraine's population will continue to decline, and the previously mentioned population level of 40 to 50 million will become unattainable. Workforce gaps are a serious issue. There are currently about 29 million people living in Ukraine. According to the National Bank of Ukraine, another 200,000 people left the country in 2024, further worsening the labour shortage. At least 8.2 million workers would be needed for the future recovery of the Ukrainian economy. Voska Bojnik says the Ukrainian government must develop a migration policy by 2026 that focuses on reducing this shortage. Even before the war, Ukraine had suffered the most drastic population decline in Europe. Due to high mortality, low birth rates and emigration, the population was decreasing by hundreds of thousands of people each year. After the outbreak of war, millions more fled or were forced across the border by the advancing Russian army. A significant proportion of the working-age men were conscripted into the army, many of whom have now died or been crippled by battlefield injuries. So they're saying there that they need to have about 40 to 50 million people in Ukraine, and at the moment there's only 29 million. I mean, that's barely over half the number that they were expecting. Is that 40 to 50 million number? Is that what you, is that the population that used to be in Ukraine before now, Matt? Do you know?
Higher than that. In Soviet times, it was even higher than that. So, but I have no idea where he's getting this 8.2 million workers. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what model he's using there that he doesn't explain. For any future recovery. I don't know if he means just, rebuilding cities. I don't know, 8.2 million seems an awful lot. It's the Ukrainian government's fault that anything needs to be rebuilt. This war should have ended in April of 2022. This force, he must develop a migration policy. These are problems that oligarchy brought about that were very easily solvable. The last thing they'll do, of course, and this began with Chernobyl. A lot of the mythology on Chernobyl that a lot of Russian and Ukrainian scientists have discovered, the radiation was not nearly as bad as anyone thought, and abortion and not having kids became fashionable because they were told they were going to give birth to mutants, and it simply wasn't the case, not in Ukraine, not in Belarus, and it started there, and it's almost like having children, and bringing children into Ukraine like this doesn't seem to be a great idea. But of course, you know damn well that the migrants will have plenty of kids and they'll have plenty of motivation for it. So 8.2 million workers, I have no idea where he gets that. That's an arbitrary number. It's not an industrialized, what's left of Ukraine is not necessarily industrialized. Now, this was written some time ago. The number of killed in action is about 2 million now. And desertion is huge. You have millions of Ukrainian men living abroad. No one's even talking about that or simply making it worth their while for Ukrainian women to have more children. That's off the table for some reason. And that's why, again, the only solution over and over again, it's like they're creating hypnotized parrots here. So I don't know even what kind of economy that they are going to create. They're going to rebuild. The economy was third world since the 90s. Didn't have to be, but it was. I mean, back in one of my first radio lectures, 2008, was entitled Ukraine at the Door of the Fourth World. This has been going on for a long time, all of it unnecessary. And again, everything I've been saying has been confirmed. There is nothing nationalist about any of this. This is, you know, it's sort of like, you know, fighting for Irish independence only to bring, you know, Africans in to take the jobs. It's the same thing here. We're going to fight for Ukrainian independence. We're going to fight against the Russians to give it over to Africans and almost exclusively Jewish oligarchs. And that's not just for lower level jobs either. That's for higher level jobs. 8.2 million. That's something that he, I don't know where it came from, but again, that's repeated in newspapers. That's repeated everywhere now. Because it's obviously true. You know, no one questions it. There's a million different ways to increase the population. This has been in mind for a long time, and not just for Ukraine, but the sheer number of organizations that have been in existence for at least 10 years, mostly NGOs, and including NGOs that try to sound like government agencies, like the Migration Policy Office. That sounds like a government agency, but it's not. It's an NGO. NGOs are financed usually by Western capital. And the so-called recovery of Ukraine is going to be funneled through BlackRock, just like the bailouts of the banks in the U.S. were funneled through BlackRock. That's what BlackRock does these days. And this is their policy. This is what they've always wanted. You can't get more left-wing than the people, the Jews who run BlackRock. The entire organization is Judaic at the top. And so this is what these Ukrainian men, this is what they're fighting for. And now it's being made public more than ever. So why in heaven's name are these guys going to continue to fight? The desertion was high to begin with. I mean, crisis levels. Now, if they get this news, they're going to, you know, what am I fighting for? This is what I'm fighting for. You know, they're not fighting for Ukraine. There's no way they could have believed that. They were forced to the front to be vaporized the minute they get there. The Russian military now is a machine, absolutely invincible today. Its size, how battle-hardened it is. These mercenaries and guys are throwing against them are barely trained. But they're being threatened to go to the front, just like, you know, Stalin did. They had people behind them. If you run, you're going to get shot. But desertion continues. Even with that, desertion continues to be a problem. They're not fighting for this. And unless something happens drastically, maybe it could be too late now for all we know. I don't want to think that. I talk about that in my book, too, whether it is or not. But a military coup with Cossack assistance is the only way out. And it might be too late. I don't know. I don't want to think that, but it could be true.
I hadn't actually thought about the effect of Chernobyl. I was thinking that low fertility rate was just, it's generally low amongst all white countries, but that is particularly bad. And obviously, if they were fearful that they would have mutated children, then that's going to put you off having children before this war. And we're saying we don't know what the economy is going to be, and Ukraine is a third world country, effectively. But Zelensky is always at the World Economic Forum, isn't he? So he's obviously getting his orders from the World Economic Forum. So whatever happens to Ukraine, it will be directed by the WEF. I should imagine that they're looking at this as a golden opportunity to sort of start from year zero in the same way that Pol Pot did, just start from year zero in Ukraine. So they must be rubbing their hands with glee at being able to direct absolutely everything and having the whole country indebted basically to BlackRock and these other companies. Getting back to the article here, according to Voska Bojdik, Ukraine can mostly attract labour from countries where the standard of living is even lower than in Ukraine. Many of the working class Ukrainian men who survived the war may therefore see the labour power they could have wielded after the war evaporate as an influx of even poorer migrants enter the country and drive down wages. This means that immigrants may arrive mainly from Bangladesh, India, Nepal, as well as North African and Central Asian countries. This could lead to further tensions in Ukrainian society, as many of the soldiers return to a society where they have essentially been replaced. In previous wars, soldiers mostly returned home to their families, their daughters and their sons to rebuild. Often peace brought population booms and more boys, known as the returning soldier effect, which would help rebuild the population's decimated male population. Unlike the US following World War II, Ukraine is unlikely to experience a massive baby boom. Many soldiers there returned home to women who remained in the country despite the hardship they faced. In Ukraine, childbearing women fled the country in tremendous numbers, so it is unclear what these soldiers will be returning to. Furthermore, these men may now be competing with male newcomers from across the Third World, which means the people Ukrainians fought and killed for when they left may not be the people that they come home to. That's the essential point, isn't it? They're fighting for the Ukrainian people, but when they come back, they're going to find that the Ukrainian people have been replaced by people from India and Nepal and even poorer countries. I mean, this is just a recipe for disaster, Matt. What do you make of what they're saying here about the baby boom?
Yeah, well, the other point about the U.S. is that the war wasn't fought on American soil. So there was no reason for women to go anywhere. You know, the returning soldier effect is just the baby boomers. Not to mention returning soldiers got tremendous numbers of benefits. The GI Bill, where they can go back to school and everything else. They had there was so much optimism. The economy started booming, you know, because people mean power. You know, falling populations mean poverty. So there's a good reason why it's not going to affect Ukraine. Somehow, though, they're not even talking about bringing the women back. The only thing they care about is bringing fourth worlders in. And again, even worse off than Ukraine. That's a very short list of countries. But you have NGOs that are already operating in these countries, lying to them. But the same thing for Europe, the rest of Europe. But you already have some of these organizations, as I've mentioned, in Congo, in Ghana, in Mali, in, you know, places that are, you know, well, Syria now, didn't have to be Syria, it was almost first world, but Libya now are worse off, being told that, you know, the streets are paved with gold. You know, I remember ads back in the early 2000s, when I was first learning the languages, saying that immigration to America, you're going to get the best jobs. Essentially, the streets are paved with gold there. Immediate employment. Well, it was all lies. But the brain drain was almost artificially created. This has been on the agenda for a very long time. And you're absolutely right to bring up Davos. You know, I titled my book, translates to is debts paid in blood. For 20 years, I asked the question both in writing and in podcast form, why is the IMF loaning money, you know, billions of dollars to a country with no economy that has absolutely no way to pay it back? It disappears. It has no function. They know this. And they just sent another few billion to the IMF. Well, I guess if they could take the land over, well, they've already done that. They could take the sovereignty. They've already done that. So what's left? The blood of its men. Not just the blood of its men, the blood of its best men. And its best men have long since been killed. They were killed in 2022. Putin was very careful. He's always been very careful to avoid hitting civilian centers. Because for the most part, this war was done in Russian-speaking areas. It's only when the Ukrainian government at the U.S. Demand started using terrorism, hitting Crimea, hitting even Moscow, and killing civilians. Only then was he forced to take these actions. He wasn't taking them before. He didn't want to destroy. Half this stuff was built by Russia anyway. Ukraine, after independence, didn't build a single nuclear plant. All of these things, these are all Russian made, either Soviet or Russian. And Ukraine really didn't have the means or the wherewithal to maintain them. So that's why the movement of the Russian infantry has always been so slow. He's no interest in killing Russians and Orthodox Slavs. But now they forced him to the point where he has to. He has to respond. The last thing he wanted to do. And that just makes everything worse. This is the oligarchy's fault. An oligarchy. And remember, Zelensky hasn't been president of Ukraine since May of 23. May of 24. That's when his presidential powers ran out. So he's president of nothing. He's just a spokesman for the oligarchy. And the oligarchy is really out in the open. They're not even hiding anymore. And they're the ones who decide what law is and what the policy is going to be. Any election is going to be rigged, obviously. I don't know. Zelensky's got to have negative popularity numbers, if that's even possible. No different than Yeltsin did. Yeltsin still got elected anyway in ridiculously rigged elections back in the 90s. But it's tragic on so many levels. You know, Ukraine, had they remained in the Russian orbit while still being independent, they would be an extraordinary society today. As you said, high IQ, the highest advanced degree, people with master's and PhDs in the entire world, percentage-wise. Some of the best-looking women on the planet, in my opinion. They had it all. Great resources. They had everything. They had everything you could possibly want to become a wealthy and powerful country. And because the oligarchs took over, it's now been reduced to this. And it's a tragedy that really is, it's sad. It's sad for anybody, but for Orthodox people, especially Slavs, for anybody. This is sad to the point of not really having a vocabulary to describe it anymore.
Well, why can't they bring the women back, the women refugees? I mean, if the war's over, the countries that the women, female refugees went to, surely they would be saying, well, the war's over now. You can go back. We don't have to pay you the welfare money anymore. I mean, that's the general idea. I don't understand why they have to bring in Africans to replace them. If what they're talking about is once the war is over, we need to have more children, people to replace the ones that are already here. I can't see why they can't encourage the Ukrainian refugees to come back in the same way that Denmark is sending Syrians back to Syria. I mean, surely it's the same thing. Well, these men may also be coming home to the tensions seen in Western Europe. These new migrants come from vastly different cultures than Ukraine. And unlike Western Europe, Ukrainians are, quote, highly ethnocentric and racist, close quote, meaning that these newcomers may not be embraced by society, leading to further divisions. Numerous NGOs and non-profits had complained for years that Ukrainians were racist and unwelcoming to foreigners. Although relatively few people of African origin reside in Ukraine, the rate of violence against this group has been extraordinary. African refugees, students, visitors, and the handful of citizens and permanent residents of African origin have lived under constant threat of harassment and violence. And that's according to Hate Crime Survey from 2008. Ukraine always featured high numbers of militia groups and skinhead football hooligans, and brutal attacks have taken place in Ukraine even before the war. For those hoping for a multicultural utopia in Ukraine after the war, some may be hoping that the incredible numbers of the young Ukrainians who fought for units such as Azov never actually come home. In other words, these men were useful for fighting the Russians, but perhaps not so useful for the multicultural society employers and international capital are hoping for after the war. Although few have voiced their opinion about what immigration will look like in Ukraine after the war, others have also openly called for a massive demographic transformation. And that's what we're seeing, basically. They're talking about it being a done deal. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
I love this. I went back to this hate crime survey. I don't know why they stopped at 2008, but it's very weak. There's like two paragraphs there about Ukraine. I looked up some of their footnotes that they use, and they just cite themselves. So this is probably largely made up. Usually these kind of things, if they exist at all, are drug deals gone wrong. If there's a fight between people of different races over God knows what, it could be anything, it's automatically considered a hate crime. They need to really pad the numbers. But I have the hate crime survey from 2008 for some reason. And yeah, three paragraphs of this. And I also made the prediction in my book as well that these militias, which are totally destroyed now, so I don't know what they're talking about there. They were destroyed early in the war. They were useful. You know, the regime is completely globalist. But occasionally, when it suits them, they need to support some kind of nationalism. You know, it used to be Albanian. Now it's Ukrainian. But the minute it's over and they're not useful anymore, they're going to go to prison. And, you know, Ukrainian nationalists have egg all over their faces. And I know Ukrainian nationalists. I know them very well. And they'll never admit this, especially those in the U.S. Ukraine it has a very strong national tradition. I have a book out entitled Ukrainian Nationalism, which sees Ukrainian nationalism very positively. It's a beautiful culture, and not just because it's Orthodox, but it's a beautiful culture in every way. And Ukrainians want to defend it. But the Jews who've taken over, connected with Chabad and Kolomoisky, even though Kolomoisky is out of the country now, they don't care about that. They despise the Cossacks. They despise their reaction to Jewish control in the Polish Empire. And they do think in those terms. Remember, New Khazaria was going to take a large portion of Crimea and southern Ukraine and the Caucasus. They can't do that now, but that was part of the agenda. So the only thing that they're going to do now, not bring the women back, but just pass more laws, which they can do easily, you know, but won't even be passed. They'll be simply decreed. Any act against a non-Ukrainian is going to be, you know, you end up in prison or drafted, worse. They draft people off the street. They grab people off the street anyway. There's no law. So all these groups that were praised to the skies just a few years ago, as I predicted, now we're going to be destroyed by the state. But these groups don't really exist anymore. I think that's mostly a memory, unless they deserted. But again, this whole thing this has been a plan for a long time. This is being run by Davos, BlackRock. This is part of the Great Reset. This is an experiment for the Great Reset. And unless the military takes action and gets rid of this government and goes to Russia for help and protection, there's going to be no Ukraine. And that's the worst part of this whole thing.
Matt, just before we finish, do you think that that is feasible? Do you think that that could actually happen, that the military could take over and essentially form an alliance with Russia? Or is that just, that's what you would like to see, but you doubt it would happen?
I can't. These generals are sending boys to certain death. I don't know how many generals can do that, how long they can do that with a conscience. They're seeing what's happening around them. They see Zelensky totally out of his mind. He's a coke addict. He's planning on running away from the country anyway. He has mansions all over the world. Whoever would take over this government would be very popular very quickly. They have every incentive to do it, especially with, you know, there's plenty of Cossacks still there. People don't know about them, but they're still there. This would be extraordinary. There hasn't been a lot of anti-Russian thinking by Ukrainians, anti-Soviet thinking, anti-communist thinking, but not Russians as such. And I talked about this years ago in the Kiev Institute for Sociology. Their polls of huge numbers of Ukrainians from all over the country, that anti-Russian thought, you know, being anti-Russian was not, even in the West, was not substantial. Now, I don't know with the war and the propaganda, I don't know. Maybe that's changed. But they absolutely despise this government. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend. If I'm a general, even a lower level general in Ukraine, I have every incentive to take over. Yeah, the West would hate me, but so what? You know, I'd be the most popular man in the Slavic world if I did this. and kicking these guys out and bringing in Chinese investment, Russian investment, bringing their Ukrainians home from all over the country, saying it's okay now, no more war, we're not doing this crap anymore. Giving tax breaks for more children. Within a few years, they could be back on track again. They have every incentive to do this. But either they're brainwashed, or they're scared of being killed, or they're just depressed. But how long can generals be sending boys, and sometimes they're all boys, sent to certain death? How do they sleep at night? And that's exactly what they're doing. And I don't know how it hasn't happened already.
So it very well could happen, and we hope it does happen, and that they make peace with their neighbours. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless, and hail victory.